There are interesting developments and turns and twists with the coronavirus pandemic situation. So we'll talk about that. But to begin with, we'll talk about three myths which have emerged, three mythologies, or you can call them three questions which are based on some misconceptions. So let me try and answer those first. And trust me, I've spoken with specialists who deal with this, scientists, and also experts. So here are the three questions. One question is, first of all, that there was that data point that we saw some time back from Ministry of Health that said that 47% of people who've died in India are below the age of 60. Does it that mean a lot of young people are dying and young people are as vulnerable as the old people? Because if you use the data point like that, that is the message you get. Number two, remdesivir, the antiviral drug of produced by Gilead, the American firm. In the WHO solidarity trial, it's been found that this is not effective in reducing mortality. Does it mean that this drug is useless or ineffective? And if that is so, how come in India, Indian drug controller has not withdrawn clearance for it? Indian doctors, hospitals are using it quite liberally. And also that it is after the WHO research report that US FDA, which usually is quite strict with these things, has actually given clearance to remdesivir. So what is all this confusion? Isn't the drug useless? Because that's a question a lot of people are asking me also. Second, and number three, ICMR's own study has said that plasma therapy is not working, and they might actually be recommending that plasma therapy should be stopped. Now, is that a story? That means plasma therapy doesn't work at all. Would it be right then to now enforce a blanket stop on plasma therapy? So these are the three big misconceptions. Let me go over them one by one with facts. So first of all, age. It is true that 47% of all deaths in India are from among people who are below 60 years of age. Looks really bad for young people. But then you flip it. I always keep telling you, look at percentages, look at absolutes. So when you flip this data, you ask a second question. How many people in India are above 60 years of age and how many people in India are below 60 years of age? So India is a young country, not as young as Pakistan. Pakistan is still about 4-5 years younger than India in terms of average age, but India is still very young. So the number of Indians, that is the percentage of Indians above 60 years of age, is just about 8%, which means just about 10 crores of 138 crore Indians are over the age of 60. Now, it follows that 90%, 92% of Indians are below the age of 60. So, as I said, flip the data now. And when you flip it, you see that 92% people of India, that is Indians below the age of 60, account for 47% of all coronavirus mortalities, whereas just 8% Indians, just 8% of us above the age of 60, we account for 53% coronavirus mortalities. So once again, look at percentages, look at absolutes, look at data carefully, and look at data intelligently. I have led my life by believing that Excel sheets can be the most misleading thing in our lives. So please apply the basic test of reasonableness and intelligent fact-checking to data. The data tells you that older people older than 60 are enormously more vulnerable to coronavirus. In fact, several times more vulnerable than younger people. It doesn't mean that younger people are immune or safe and they should not worry or they should not be careful. But once again, don't let this confuse you. The second confusion, remdesivir. Now, I can do no better than refer to you refer you to this tweet by Gagandeep Kang, who is one of India's foremost scientists. She is the first woman scientist from India to be a member of a fellow of Royal Society. She's been very closely involved with the coronavirus research, vaccine research, and other follow-ups. She's now at Vellore at Christian Medical College. Now, she says in her tweet that just because WHO's study says, solidarity trial says that remdesivir does not reduce mortality, it does not mean that it is ineffective. Because that trial was only about mortality. Remdesivir, on the other hand, has so far been found useful in reducing the recovery period. So a patient who may have taken 15 days now takes 11 days or 10 days. And second, it is reducing hospitalization in patients. So when you use this on trials on patients who are already in ICUs and already in the serious phase of the disease, then it doesn't reverse mortality. True. But if you use it early enough, it may save a lot of patients from going to hospital in the first place. So mortality will not be the question, that comes much later. But if it can nip the sickness much earlier, then mortality question is addressed. So the new view that's emerging on remdesivir, and I've spoken with Kiran Mazumdar-Shaw also on this, who is one of our foremost biotech entrepreneurs, the new view is that remdesivir should be used much earlier in the illness. Why? The logic is remdesivir's action is to reduce viral replication. So as your body's immune system girds up or wakes up to fight the virus, it can get overwhelmed if the virus multiplies too fast. What remdesivir could do and probably does is to reduce the rate of viral replication. So the number of the virus in your body remains smaller, so your system can deal with the virus without getting overwhelmed. So remdesivir has a role, and a good role. That's the reason US FDA has even now approved it after the WHO trial. So please don't worry about it. Don't think that this medication is also gone. Now, it's correct that people say that one thing that really works is steroids. But remember, there are two stages to coronavirus disease. It's a 2-week disease in case it turns bad. 95, 97, maybe 99% cases, nothing will happen. 92% cases, as our health minister says, Indians are asymptomatic with this. But if it goes bad, it's a 2-week disease. The first week, generally your body has the virus and your immune system is fighting the virus. And the virus then goes away in a week, it's over. Then it is your body's overexcited or irritated or angry immune system that is acting on itself, that is acting on the body and eating it up. That is where, to calm down your immune reaction, steroids are needed. So there is a time for steroids, there is a time for antivirals. So the time for antivirals, the current view, I read the global media on this, the current view is the time for antivirals is in the first week. Early on, the doctors will choose when you don't choose it. And second, the time for steroids is in the second week. Again, if you need it, and doctors make that choice in the hospital. Because what happens if you use remdesivir or antivirals in the second week, by that time your body doesn't have the virus. So this is wasted. It is not cutting down any viral replication. But similarly, if you use steroids early in the infection, what the steroids do is they block your body's immune reaction too early. So your body is not able to fight the virus and virus keeps replicating. So this is a balance that doctors have to strike. But this is a time when everybody is an expert, and we read these stories and these misconceptions then take root. So be careful. That is the second myth which does not pass a fact check. Number three, plasma. Now, if plasma therapy doesn't work, if antibodies don't work, then how come monoclonal antibodies work? Because the principle is the same, that your body gets these antibodies as a kind of reinforcement to fight the virus. But you say plasma therapy doesn't work because plasma therapy has been tried, research has taken place. Now see this story that we carried on the print.in, talking to scientists, and this is what I read on global media as well. It is true that all antibodies do not help a patient fight coronavirus, because there are antibodies and antibodies. So there are antibodies which are normal antibodies, and then there are neutralizing antibodies. So the key thing is neutralizing antibodies. So every patient who's recovered from coronavirus and who has antibodies in his or her plasma may not necessarily have neutralizing antibodies. So to use that plasma, either you should be able to separate neutralizing antibodies, which is the principle followed with monoclonal antibodies, that you take out one antibody, and monoclonal, we explained it to you earlier, you use biotechnology, genetic technology to then replicate its numbers, so your body gets a big shot of this neutralizing antibodies and a reinforcement. Now scientifically it is important to first figure out whether plasma that you might transfuse in a patient carries neutralizing antibodies or not. Now that is a complex bit of research work to do. Every lab is not equipped to do it. So when you use it after checking for neutralizing antibodies, I believe again from research around the world, it has a good effect. But maybe 9 out of the 10 samples that we get from recovered patients do not have neutralizing antibodies, and that's why the way this study was designed, questions have been raised about this study, although it's going to be published in British Medical Journal now, and there will be questions then. The question is that was it earlier done? Were these plasma samples earlier checked out for neutralizing antibodies? And I can tell you something, a little bit of an inside information, that when VVIPs or VIPs fall sick in India and they have to be given plasma therapy, so what is done? Then somebody, whatever hospital they are in, everybody knows a VIP is a VIP, they'll take maybe 5 or 6 or 8 plasma samples from patients who've recovered in that same blood group, take out little samples from those plasma and send those to one of the few labs in India which can identify neutralized antibodies and tell you whether these have neutralizing antibodies or not. Then that plasma is transfused into that patient, and there are many VIP cases who have recovered like this. Please don't ask me to name them, patient confidentiality is important. I am not even grudging it to them, because any life that is saved is a bonus, but just making the point that please do not throw the baby with the bath water in this case, because more work needs to be done on plasma. Remember again, all antibodies don't work, only neutralizing antibodies work, and that is the principle of monoclonal antibodies. So these three myths busted. I have read a very interesting article in Financial Times, which I am sharing with you, which tells you why death toll and infections in Africa have been so little. 17% of the world's population lives in Africa. Africa has only 3.5% of the world's fatalities, even if they are being undercounted. Now, first of all, you can see parallels with the subcontinent. Now, the subcontinent is almost 20% of the world's population, but the fatalities of percentage of global fatalities is much less than that. Now, there are many factors which are common between Africa and Asia, particularly South Asia. One is a record of frequent infections in the past. Second is BCG vaccination. Third, all these systems, although these countries are poor, but they have systems that are used to dealing with epidemics. So those things work. But most importantly, go back to our myth number one that we busted today. These are young populations. So Africa also has much younger populations than, say, in the Western world. So do not ever forget the age fatality, the age complication, the age severe COVID risk. So if you are of an older age, then you have to be that much more careful. It does not apply that if you are younger, you can afford to be reckless or careless. Now, I will just quickly run through some data on India, which is interesting. Although Monday data can be a little bit misleading because Sunday's full figures don't come in, and also Sunday fewer tests take place. But so we are not going by just today's figures, although the graphics you see are updated up to today. But if you look at all these graphics that will run one by one, you can see some very clear patterns in India. First of all, you can see that deaths today are below 500 for the first time in 3 months. Now, health warning, this is a Monday count. Sunday's count may be a little lower, but you can see that the count has been declining. Until about 2 weeks back, it was continuing to be above 1,000. So for the first time, going below 500, we'll see what happens tomorrow, but going below 500 is a very good sign for the first time. Second, India's recovery rate is above 90%, which is a bit of a misleading thing, because if our fatality rate is only 1.5%, then it follows that 98.5% people will recover eventually. But now this has gone above 90%. Good thing nevertheless. Then you see India's case fatality rate. That is the number of percentage of people who die in terms of how many were diagnosed to be coronavirus positive. This has come to 1.5%. So 1.2, 1.1, 1.52, 1.51, 1.5. It was about 3 to begin with, and it's now coming down. But since the base now is very large, it's a 6-month base, so you will not have a fall in the overall percentage that is steep. But even if 0.01% fall now means a substantial improvement at this point, and that is essentially because doctors are learning to deal with this much better, so more lives are being saved. In fact, the one important statistics is the number of people on ventilators. When this pandemic started, everybody thought India needs 500,000 ventilators, 200,000 ventilators. I think the most conservative estimate I had seen was 1,10,000 ventilators. The fact is, India today has about 40,000 ventilators, most of which fortunately are unused. They are not needed for coronavirus patients. So if you look at the number of people who are in ICUs or on oxygen O2 beds, as they are called, oxygen beds, or on ventilators, all three, I share with you this graphic from the Ministry of Health up to 19th of October. If you look at this graphic, then the peak of this total population, total demographic needing oxygen, either O2 beds or ICU or ventilator, the peak was on 25th of September. That is a month back. And that peak was 75,000 and a few. So for the first and the last time, this number crossed 75,000. It is not all ventilators. In fact, very few of them are ventilators. Now that number has declined, and it's declining every day, it has declined to the lower 50,000. Once again, it's an improvement. It also tells you that many ventilators, many ICU beds, many oxygen beds are now available. That doesn't mean be reckless again and add numbers. There is nothing good about being sick in an ICU just because a bed is available. The best thing is to avoid the disease. So that's a very important fact. Then you look at fatalities. I told you India's case fatality rate is down to 1.5%. But even there are 4 states that are giving India trouble and that are sort of distorting India's overall figure. Punjab, unfortunately, the champion of champions in the wrong area. Punjab is the highest in India, 3.14% case fatality rate. Terrible, and twice as much as the national average, and I just can't understand why this is the case. Second, Maharashtra. Remember the last time we spoke about TV, 2 weeks back, we had told you that Maharashtra was the, for all the large states in India, Maharashtra was the worst. It had a case fatality rate of above 3%. Maharashtra has made an improvement. Now Maharashtra is 2.63. And one reason they've made improvement is they are testing a lot more than before. Earlier they were testing too little. So the more cases you have, the less your case fatality rate, because your base increases. So Maharashtra, which until 2 weeks back had a test positivity rate of 20%, which means they were testing too little, last week that test positivity rate had come down to about 10%, which means they were testing quite a lot. They should still test more because your TPR should be less than 8%. The national test positivity rate at this point last week was 3.5%. Yesterday was 4.8%, but it's Sunday again, so Sunday is distorted. So let's not take Sunday. Maharashtra is still three times as much as the rest of the country. So Maharashtra has to test a lot more, but their case fatality rate is looking better now. It is 2.63%. The other champion state, the bronze medalist from the wrong side, is Gujarat. That is 2.21%. And West Bengal is the fourth at 1.86%. Although I must tell you, there are doubts about West Bengal's figures, and you will see some stories about that in days to come. Also, important thing is India's total tests have now crossed the 10 crore mark. We have done 10 crore 34 lakh tests, and it is because of these tests that it looks like that at this point India has gotten hold of this graph and is able to bend it in the right direction. It doesn't mean that the disease or the virus is defeated. Any country which ever concluded that the virus is defeated has lived to regret it, because all of us know what a camel looks like. A camel has a hump. But you look at what's happening in America, in Europe, in many of these countries, they are now heading for their second hump, like that Bactrian camel, the two-humped Bactrian camel. You don't want the Indian graph to be like that. Let this graph be like the Indian camel, one hump. So we are over that hump. It's important to keep it there, particularly now when the festival season is coming in.